Hello and welcome to C2Y Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. My name is Wolfgang Vachon. On November 18th, 2011, for the first time in the history of Canada, people currently and formerly living in care had hearings at a provincial legislature. On that first day, over 300 people showed up to speak about and listen to others share their experiences living in the child welfare system. On the second day of hearings, over 500 people came. Why were these hearings so important? Only 44% of youth in care graduate high school. 43% of homeless youth have previous child welfare involvement. Child welfare involvement is a risk factor for substance abuse and incarceration. These realities have been known for many years now. These realities are unacceptable, and the Ontario Provincial Advocate's Office created the hearings to see how these realities could be changed. Today we're going to discuss the recently released report from the Youth Leaving Care hearings called My Real Life Book. I'm speaking with Wendy and Rashida. Welcome.
Hi.
Both of you were young people involved in the hearings.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining me. And let me start by saying congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The hearings are super impressive, and the report is super impressive. At this point in time, what are your thoughts about the whole process?
Personally, I'm really excited because I think the response has been really great. I think a lot of people have been very supportive, and even support in places where we didn't really expect support. And I think that's, you know, also partially because we tried to make this a safe experience for everyone. We didn't want to point any fingers. That wasn't the point of this. So I hope that lended a hand to people being able to be supportive.
Also, it's Rashida. Also, a lot of youth involvement was very important through this process. Having the youth being involved every part of the way, and also lending their input and also meeting with the ministers and spreading the word and bringing awareness to other communities about what the point of My Real Life Book is. So that's really important with this process, letting everyone know what this report is about and why it's important to every kid in care.
You made a real effort not to point fingers, stigmatize people. Mm-hmm. Why was that so important?
We didn't want to come from an angle where we want to blame people, because that's not the point of it. We wanted to make change. And we were very adamant about not blaming some people, because usually when you blame people, they just tune right out and they don't want to hear it. So we wanted to make sure that people are listening. We didn't want to come about it in a way that we're offending anyone or hurting anyone's feelings, because there are good people out there. There are people who legitimately want to make change or care about children, youth, and care. And that was the important thing. We wanted more better outcomes. That's the point of it, not to be calling out names or blaming people. It's about the youth and the children who are not getting better outcomes, and that's what we wanted.
Yeah, I agree.
How did each of you become involved in the hearings?
I actually graduated for broadcast television, and when they sent out the job posting, my worker forwarded it to me, and there was a social media lead, and part of the job description would be making videos, and you know, this has obviously always been, I've been very passionate about advocating for youth. I've done it within my own children's aid, and just putting two things that I love together was a deal breaker for me, so I was here as soon as I could for an interview.
Nice. I just want to pick up on how else do you advocate for youth?
Well, I think my children's age is really great. I'm just going to shout out to Durham. we do a lot of fundraisers for bursaries and stuff, so I go to bursary dinners, and I will speak on, you know, what the experience of being in care is and how people donating that money to children, youth, and care to get through school is important. So I attend that stuff, and I also actually sit on the board of my children's aid, so that's really cool. I have a board meeting tonight.
How's that, to go from young person in care to sitting on the board?
It's really interesting. You know, sometimes I'm sitting there and they're talking numbers and like this and like hiring people, and I'm just like, I don't know what I should say right now. But I think it's definitely important for them to have a youth voice, especially in something that oversees how things operate. And I hope my presence there has made a difference. I'm definitely going to be bringing reports to them and telling them to read it. So
good for you. Yes. And Rashida, how did you become involved?
I got involved. I was just graduating college from the social service worker program, and I wanted something to get some experience in the field, and my worker told me about this position, and I was like, this is a good stepping stone. So I did that, and I also heard about the advocate's office in the May prior to getting hired, when we went to the lobby day, which you meet with all the MPs and the Minister of Children and Youth Services at Queen's Park. So I was really excited about that. I was really excited to make change. I just got involved, unfortunately, late in my be aging out of care in advocating for children and youth. So I volunteer. I still volunteer with the Crown Ward Educational Championship Team. It's a long name. And their purpose, they were created by the ministry. Their purpose is to create better outcomes for children and youth in care who aren't doing so well in post-secondary, or finding better options for them so that we can raise the 44% to a higher percentage. So that's what we're doing at my agency, with along with Halton and Peel Children's Aid.
How's it going?
It's going good. We did an event, and we didn't have as good as a turnout as we wanted, and we're trying to find a different avenue of how to get more youth involved. Unfortunately, it's kind of hard because sometimes you get adults who don't already know about social media, so they don't even know about Facebook or don't have a Twitter account, and we're just trying to say, try and broaden your horizons. Try and get a Facebook and Twitter account, because it kind of scares kids away when you don't interact with them on the same level they interact with their peers or other people. So we're trying to get that across, but it's really improving, and I'm really proud of what we're doing.
Nice.
Having a social media campaign really worked for this project as well, my Real Life Book project. Just want to point that out. So
the hearings, what were some of your memories of the hearings?
There's a lot of good memories. I, of course, was crying at some parts. Like, it's not, when people are telling about their tough experiences, it's not easy to just sit there. And it's not easy to see the pain in people's eyes. It was very powerful in the sense that you can see the ministers and the MPPs and other community leaders coming together and saying, okay, well, we actually want to hear about what changes that need to be done. So it was very impactful in that sense. And our volunteers did awesome. We had to wake up really early, and none of them complained about waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go set up and help people. And so it was so much work, but I'll let Wendy expand more.
I mean, because of my role, I was a little working more behind the scenes, and, you know, just kind of speaking to the volunteers, I think we really created a community amongst the volunteers, and we formed a lot of strong friendships. One thing that happened with my team, we had three different teams. We had the panels, we had the events who were handing out these little cards and stuff, and we had a social media team. So the social media team, I was the lead for that, and we were doing videos and just kind of interviewing people as they came along, and it was really great for me to be able to kind of share my knowledge. And I don't mean that in a condescending way, but it was really great to see other people come in and be the same passion as me, and you know, kind of be able to teach them a little. And at the end, they actually ended up, you know, you never realize how big of an impact you're making on someone, because at the very end, they gave me a video, and they had made something for me, just saying thank you, and, like, how, you know, you just, like, it was just overwhelming, right? Like, to see that kind of response from something that you think is so tiny.
And that's so often the experiences. Can you tell me how the hearings came about?
Well, Erwin is very fond of a story about him attending a meeting in Guelph. where he kind of listened to what the youth were saying about their experiences and, you know, how difficult it was to age out and the success levels, and he kind of said, well, hey, I've been hearing this for years. And one of the youth stood up and challenged him, saying, well, okay, what are you going to do about it? So Irwin took that seriously. Irwin's not the kind of guy who would just kind of brush that kind of thing off. And they started, the office started developing this idea of hearings, and then they got the youth leads involved, and we kind of took it from there. They kind of passed the torch off to us. Do you want to talk a little bit about what happened when we got here?
Okay, so when we got here, we literally had our second day. We were told there was a stakeholders meeting, so we had a whole bunch of people who were from different agencies from across Ontario who all have the same common interest, which is child welfare, and we were supposed to present this idea of the Youth Leave and Care hearings. So they were all on board, and then we started the submission process. So we had to make a submission form, and that was the longest process I've ever gone through. We had to edit, we had to reprint, edit, reprint. It was a lot of work. Then we started going around Ontario and presenting this idea and trying to get the youth on board too, because this project honestly wouldn't mean so much if the youth weren't behind it. And that was the important thing. We wanted the youth behind it, because as much stakeholders can say, I don't know about that, the youth, this is what it's about, the youth. So
when the youth are behind it, what does that bring to the project?
It brings meaning. That's what my real life book is about. It's about, it's all these experiences, all these things that are saying that this needs to change. That the report doesn't have, it has professionals' submissions also, but we really want to focus on things that the youth are saying need to change. And we wanted to get as much voices in this report as possible, because we thought we need as much representation on the issues. We don't want to just go up to Queen's Park and say, this is what the issues are, without actually asking people what it is. So that's the point of going around and getting as much support as possible, because we needed as much voice, we needed as much diversity in this report, and we needed the voices, and that's what it's about.
And those youth voices come through so, so strong in the report. I mean, all of the whole report is written by young people.
Yeah.
All the quotes, or not all the quotes, because you do quote some service providers as well, but
yes.
So many of the quotes are from service users. The poignancy and the power of those comments, those critiques are quite strong. In Ontario, there's about 8,300
mm-hmm.
youth in care.
Mm-hmm.
The National Youth in Care Network places the youth in care in Canada at about 75,000.
Mm-hmm.
U.S., there's an estimate of about 435,000 children in foster care in 2009. And we look at the outcomes mentioned at the beginning around education, which mm-hmm. you are addressing, homelessness, substance abuse, incarceration. The outlook isn't super positive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both of you come from the child welfare system.
Mm-hmm.
Both of you have completed post-secondary education, and both of you are doing some amazing work. You make a whole bunch of recommendations on how these outcomes can change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to talk about some of those recommendations. There was a young woman in the report named Shailene, who's in care, and she wrote, "Just when you thought there was no more to lose, you lose it all." And for me, that is such a powerful statement, and leads to your first recommendation, which is to raise the age of termination from 21 to 25. You laugh at the word termination. The actual term is extended care and maintenance,
mm-hmm.
which, can you think of a more offensive name than extended care and maintenance?
More like, here's a check, now go take care of yourself.
It really sounds like a car, like, abbreviation.
Yes.
I don't like some of these words they use, like the word AWOL. Like, no one uses that on their kids. They don't say, my kid, usually people say, my kid ran away, but in a group home or a foster home, they said, oh, the kid went AWOL. Like,
army. Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, why do you think we use that language?
I kind of feel like it's, like, supposed to be some kind of code language that the staff make for the kids and the kids don't understand. Mm-hmm. But we catch on. We're not stupid. We know what AWOL is. Like, we know what all that stuff means. It's because it's a system. It's not built on love. And that's what the point of this report is. We want love in our lives. We don't want to be treated like we're an item. And that's the thing. We all, if you look through every section in this report, all we're asking for is to be loved and respected. And that's something that every human is supposed to get us to the moment they're born. And we cannot be taken out of our homes. That's an unsafe situation, brought into a home where we're not completely respected and loved. That's all we're asking for. And we don't want those terms, ECM. We don't want AWOL. We don't want those words anymore.
We don't want to be systemized.
No.
We want to be given a family.
Exactly. We shouldn't be treated like we're in jail.
How are you treated?
I mean, I can't complain too much about my personal experience. One of the things that's talked a lot about in the report and all the submissions is that, you know, a lot of youth in care feel like they're not quite part of the family. Mm-hmm. You know, they're treated differently than the biological kids. They're left behind when, you know, parents want time with their kids for vacation. And it's really sad. And I did experience that. I've been fortunate. I've only ever been in two homes, and I'm still with my current foster parents. But the previous home I was in, I very much felt that, you know, I was just kind of the spare kid who was renting a room. I was there for my foster parents to get a per diem every month. I did not feel part of that family. I just kind of felt like I was staying there.
And why didn't you feel part of the family? What was going on?
You could just tell from certain situations that, you know, I wasn't loved as their own children were loved by them. And, you know, they would always go for father-son time or mother-daughter time. And, you know, I remember one specific incident where the two daughters and the mother went to Girl Guide camp, and the father and the brother stayed home to get some guy time. And they sent me and my sister, who was living with me at the time, to a relief home. And it's kind of this, well, why can't the foster dad have some father-daughter time? Like, why? Like, why is it you guys and us?
Yeah.
And there's just this constant feeling most of the time in care that it's them and us, and we're the extra ones, and we're just kind of flopped in there and, you know, whatever.
And what changed with your current living situation?
I'm very fortunate, very, very fortunate. What happened was my sister, after a year in care, was going to be adopted because she wasn't going to be going back home. So the adoptive parents found out that she had a sibling, so they wanted to get to know me. And, I mean, the difference between this family and the previous family was I was, you know, shipped in with my previous family. The family I'm with now, they wanted me as part of their family. They wanted me to come and, you know, stay with my sister and have a family. And that's really what it was like. It was almost never like they were foster parents, because they didn't take me in because they were foster parents. They took me in because they loved me and because they wanted me to stay with my sister. I don't even think I've heard that story from, like, anyone else. I'm sure it happens similarly, and some foster parents keep in touch with their kids when they age out or leave care at 18, they'll leave the foster home, but, it's made the biggest impact on my life. And that's another thing. It's youth in care asking for someone to be there for them unconditionally. And I like to think that my story is kind of proof that that makes a difference in someone's life.
It does, and we know that having that someone there who loves, who cares, who hugs, as is pointed out in the report, makes such a significant difference. What was your experience of love and care?
I went through, and I'm guessing off the top of my head because I can't even count, about 13 homes, and I went through, half of them were group homes or treatment foster homes. So the foster homes, I found a lot of them did have their own biological kids or adoptive kids, and they were treated better than me. 90% of my homes I lived with were not culturally competent whatsoever. Neither were my workers. They didn't know I'd have to request what kind of hair products I needed. They assumed that I didn't care about my culture. They assumed, and it wasn't until my last placement that they started to really get that that's really important. It should have happened from when I first went into care. I also found that there's a lot of staff turnover. So a lot of staff were coming in and out of the homes. You couldn't really develop good relationships with them until my last home. Like I said, we had consistent staff, so I got really lucky there. But it was like a soap opera. Like, there was always... And sometimes staff come with their own issues, too. Like, no one's perfect. And sometimes you hear about staff... You hear rumors, like, about staff doing this and staff doing that, or kids doing this or kids doing that. And I was just so sick of it. Like, I was put in group homes, and I was what you would call a low-needs kid. Like, I didn't really cause problems. I usually went to my bed on time. I usually, like, I did everything I was supposed to do, and sometimes I was just placed in places because they said there's nowhere else to put me. And I even remember, like, one home where my foster mom, she took me out of school because her daughter said I was taking her friends. And I remember I wasn't at school at September 11th. I was listening to the radio. We didn't have cable. Like, I was at home not learning anything because this foster parent decided that her daughter deserved to go to school more than I did. And I think about that now, and I just think, how did that happen? And things like something small, like me even getting into an argument with another foster parent, they'll move me, but something like that, it took them so long to move me. I kind of feel like things can be avoided by showing a kid love and respect and not just moving them whenever there's an argument. So I've had so many experiences. I do think that there's so many staff turning over and so many staff like coming in and out of my life has kind of prepared me to not attach myself to people as much as I probably wouldn't have when I was like a kid, if I was living with my mom. But that was my experience, and a lot of kids have that experience. Unfortunately, they don't have that good attachment because people are coming in and out of their lives.
What allowed you to make it through high school? What allowed you to make it to post-secondary? What allowed you to go to college? What allowed you to be successful in college without that love, without that support for all those years?
Well, I remembered them telling me, or even just events, like with other kids in foster care, I just remember that some kids just didn't feel loved, so then they'd seek that love with the wrong company sometimes, and or they would brag about skipping school, or they'd brag about dropping out of school, and I remember saying to myself at 11 years old, I am not going to do that. No matter how much I'm hurt, because I kind of felt like being taken out of my home, I kind of had to build this barrier on me that, like, no matter what, I'm going to try and make it. And I don't want everything that's crappy that's happening to me now affect me in the future. And I always think like that, too. I always think I don't want something... I want good things for myself. So I did that, and I made sure I didn't skip any classes. I would go for extra long washroom breaks, but I would never skip classes. And I'm also, in a sense, I really like to succeed. So I don't like getting under a 70. I really hate that. And I guess that's how I drilled myself. I kind of felt, near the ending of me leaving care, I was at the same foster home for almost 3 years, and they really believed in me, and I think that also helped me. The first year of high school, it was all me saying, okay, I have to really get it together, but my foster parents really believed in me. It wasn't until grade 12 that I started, when I moved out on my own, I was so depressed, I was by myself, and I didn't want to go to school. I was being bullied by the other kids there. They were asking me why I lived on my own. And I just thought, I don't want this for me. I need to do better. And that's why I went to school. And that's why I'm advocating for other kids. If someone were to have loved me and told me, okay, you should go to school, this is what you need to do, then maybe I would have continued at that time. But there's a length of time that I didn't want to go to school.
This goes back to that point around extending. So at 18, I assume it was 18 when you...
17.
17. And you moved out onto your own. So you're in grade 12. You're 17. Mm-hmm. Extended care and maintenance says that if you're in school, you can continue to receive money from Children's Aid until you're 21. This report recommends raising that age to 25. Why raise it to 25?
Well, you know, one thing, too, is it's not just about the check, right? There's a lot that comes with it, like healthcare benefits. You know, the second you age out, you don't have that. If you're on medications, it's difficult to get by. And it's also a lot of people talk about the support of their worker. Because I think something that the general public doesn't understand is that most youth in care don't have family. Like, let that sink in for a minute. They don't have mom or dad to call. Like, they're not out on their own, but they can call home. They're not out on their own, but if they need to go somewhere for Christmas, they can go home. Most youth in care don't have that. Most youth in care have their worker to pick up the phone and say, look, you know, I got in a car accident. I don't know what to do. I'm laid on an assignment. Could you help me? Or something, right? All those little kind of, I haven't dealt with this life issue yet, and I need some guidance. They turn to their worker for that. And at 21, they lose that connection, as well as the support. And, I mean, the general population is staying at home until they're approximately 27, I think is the approximate age. And we're expecting youth in care who have had traumatic experiences, probably hasn't found someone in their experience and care to really believe in them and support them and tell them they can be successful regardless. They tell them they're not allowed to stay at home when they're 18. You know, and a lot of people take that as, wow, no one wants me, so now I have to go out and be by myself. And then at 21, you're in school, because you have to be if you're receiving ECM. You know, they won't give you ECM if you're not in school, and a lot of kids end up homeless, unfortunately, because not being homeless isn't on the checklist of receiving extended care and maintenance. And, you know, you could be approaching the middle of your college schooling, and you're supporting yourself and you don't have any emotional support, and a lot of people, as they approach that, start to spiral downwards, and they think, well, no one cares if I graduate, you know, no one's going to be there at my graduation, I'm going to have to start supporting myself, so maybe I should skip class and go to work so I can buy groceries or pay for my medications. So it's all that kind of, you know, you're given the bare minimum almost to get by for most cases, and then even that's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to have the, you know, the motivation to continue when you know you feel like you're just gonna end up failing anyways, and no one cares because, you know, CES is gonna kick you to the curb at 21.
Yeah. So that story that you shared, Rashida, about being depressed at home, mm-hmm. in school. I don't know how many times I've heard that story of, you know, and never developing the skills of how to get up and mm-hmm. and cook yourself breakfast or pour milk into your cereal and make yourself a lunch and dinner and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff that so many of us take for granted. Mm-hmm. You also addressed, Wendy, the idea of the ongoing health and education support, which is another one of the recommendations. Mm-hmm. Foster care, you recommend that foster care be extended past 18. And you also make three other recommendations: that information is collected and published on how children and youth in care are doing, to create an online resource, going back to the social media piece, an online resource for children and youth from and in care, and finally to declare a Child and Youth Care Day. Why are these three things important?
I can speak to the last two. For the statistics and the online resources, I'm also going to school right now currently for Family and Community Social Services at Gulf Humber. And I asked my teacher, we took a supporting families class, and I was like, how come we don't learn anything about kids in foster care? And she's like, I don't know, like, we don't really. We had an article and you could write about it, but there was really nothing. And when I graduated college, I asked the same thing, and they're like, there's nothing. And I was like, it's a little weird that we don't learn that, because these kids, there's child and youth workers, and they do work with kids in care some a lot of cases, but so do social workers. Those kids obviously grow up, and who are we dealing with? We're dealing with these kids who had traumatic experiences. So I thought that was really important to put that in there. And also, even speaking to trying to make change, the government needs to also see what kind of statistics they need to go off of, what really needs to change. That's where they can pinpoint what really needs to happen. So that's really important.
It's like, you know, don't parents call their kids just to check up on them? Well, you know, the province is our parent. No one's calling to check up on us. You know, where are people falling off the radar between 18 and 21? Why are they losing their extended care maintenance? What's causing them to do that? I heard a story once about a woman who, kind of what I was speaking about previously, was coming to her 21st birthday, and she got so depressed that she was going to lose everything that she just started throwing her grades away, and she just stopped caring about school. Her worker wouldn't tell her that she had some money put away for her from her parents, or I don't remember where it came from. And she didn't know that she had this resource of money that could have helped her, and she basically threw her education away. It's just, it's like, how does this stuff happen? I don't even know. Anyways, continue.
You mentioned a couple of things. One, the Children's Aid is your parent. The province is your parent. Mm-hmm. You don't have anyone else to call, and you can't pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Dalton, you know, the premier of Ontario, can you help me out? Mm-hmm. Right, I need an extra $100 for my rent this month." Or, "Oh my God, I just broke up with my boyfriend, and I don't know what to do, and I feel really sad." Mm-hmm. That's such a profound idea that. All of that is gone at 21. You asked that there be a day for child and youth care. So the Minister of Children and Youth Services has replied to this. Mm-hmm. What was his response?
Well, they put it through House, and it seems like that's going to be the day. May 14th will be the day.
Nice. So congratulations.
Thank you.
The Minister, Eric Hodgkins, Minister of Children and Youth Services here in Ontario, has responded to a variety. He's agreed to a working group mm-hmm. to address your issues. They've made a bunch of changes over the past couple years around educational support, tax support. People who left care 16, 17 can now go back, extended care and maintenance. Why do you think that this agitation for change has been successful?
One of the things that Erwin really presses is we talk a little bit the province being our parent, yet we never get a chance to talk to our parents. And I think there was just this, you know, this weight to be able to sit in a room and look at the people who provide the services, who parent us, and say, "This is what's happening to us in care," and then watch them respond, and respond in support, and respond in having a desire to change things. And I think that's just had such a big impact. It's, you know, it's just new, it's different, it's just amazing.
I agree, because no one's a parent through like computer screens or like governs people to be a mom or a dad. Like it doesn't work that way. That's not how the world works. So
I think another thing is just the process has been so real, you know, and it's not just about the youth in care coming and complaining about things. It's about them saying, "Hey, I went through care. This is what happened to me. It held me back, and we can change it by doing this." And we came in a very productive manner and said, like, "I'm not just here to tell you to fix my life. Here is how you can fix my life. Like, I can give you ideas on how this can change."
I think you guys have done an incredible job with the hearings, with the report. There's change happening all over the world. Mm-hmm. The first international youth and care conference is happening in June of this year. And you're going?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations. That'll be amazing.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very excited. Uh-huh. I also need to do some shopping as well. So, two birds with one stone. And I guess I deserve that. I have to treat myself, or even going to the gym. Like, one thing that I think would have helped me a lot when I first moved out, instead of being depressed, if I would have gotten, like, a gym membership. That would have gotten me out of the house. I could have met new people. That should have been encouraged. I kind of feel like once I aged out, I got assigned an independence worker, and she has so many kids on her caseload that she barely got time to even talk to me, so let alone her telling me, oh, you should go join a gym, or that would be coming out of my ECM because they wouldn't give me that because I'm too old. I think when I turn 16, they don't give you recreation allowance anymore, which I think is sad because then you have other health problems that these kids are going to be aging out with, like obesity, diabetes, because they're not getting a healthy lifestyle, and plus you're living off food banks, and there's so many other things. I can go on for days.
And there are so many other things, and I think you guys have made an amazing start to begin to address these things. I know that it doesn't end here. So quickly, what are the next steps?
Well, our number one recommendation is that, you know, the province of Ontario should recognize that the current system isn't working and it needs to change fundamentally. So as we did talk a little bit about kind of the six other recommendations, you know, I think one of the conclusions we came to when we were finishing up this report was that it's too much. This report, we can't, like, these were brainstorm ideas of how to fix things, but it's just too ingrained in the system. The way it's working is affecting youth in a way that it shouldn't be. Because if anything, when the province takes us out of our home to support us and guide us and help us lead better lives, we should be improving, should we not? If someone's stepping in that manner, and it's, so it's really everything that everyone wrote in about during their submissions was just, this needs to start again from the ground up, in a sense. So moving forward, we've suggested that they create a working group consisting of Youth in Care, for sure. The Youth in Care Hearings team at this office, whoever they may be, should definitely be involved, and service providers and government, because everyone's got an answer, but it's all over the place. Like, everything's in a different spot, and if we can bring everyone together to really figure out how the province can best support their youth, then, you know, hopefully we'll begin to do better. So definitely creating that working group and starting to really take an in-depth look at the system and how the youth are affected by it and how we can change that effect, the negative effects. And the best thing about it is there is positive experiences that were written in about to look at. So it's been done right, and it gets done right, and we can look at those.
I want to just add in that Youth in Care are going to always, we were very adamant about Youth in Care being involved in every step of the way. There is not going to be, we had your youth voice one time. We want to be involved in every step of the way, and we're not stopping here. So as long as this takes, we want to keep on having the youth pushing forward and creating change. And I know, and I know Wendy, we will still be involved with this as much as we can, even when we're not at the office here. We still really care about these issues, and we still want fundamental change for whoever may come after, because I aged out. Not much of these things are going to really affect me, because I'm over 21.
Yeah. I have so much confidence that the groundwork you have laid will make lasting change, and we see the change happening in the province of Ontario, and I fully expect to see it continue to change. So thank you, Wendy, thank you, Rashida, for your commitment to the change and for making sure it does happen.
Thank you.